You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news with a local perspective. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada. Today's news comes with a trigger warning for listeners. It's an update on the New Year's Eve fire from Northern Society of Domestic Peace's Amy Stokes, Mark DeHoog, a member of the Critical Incident Response Team, as well as Evie McKay with an update about Jordan Parker and Micah Urban's condition. If you are troubled, exhausted, or just unable to listen to more news about this incident, we understand. It's the bulk of today's interviews, so please do take care of yourself. On January 31st, at a house party just outside of Smithers, some form of fuel was added to a bonfire, which caused a large explosion. Community organizations have had to respond quickly to the first wave of affected individuals rocked by what they saw, whether they were at the house when it happened, their parents, guardians, and caretakers whose children were there, and friends, mostly youths, who have not been able to avoid hearing stories from the night. Amy Stokes works for the Northern Society of Domestic Peace in Smithers. The NSDP is part of the Bulkley Valley Critical Incident Response Team, a team of trained volunteers that provide support to groups in the Bulkley Valley who may suffer psychological or emotional distress following a critical incident. I'm speaking to Amy now for a briefing on the support services being offered to community members and how to connect with those services should you need them.
I'm Amy with Northern Society for Domestic Peace. I'm currently the administrative executive here at NSDP.
So we are speaking on Tuesday, but I just want to briefly touch base about the critical incident debrief on January 10th, yesterday. Can you tell me what professional support is being offered at that critical incident debrief?
For sure. So we've connected with our BV CERT team, which is the Bulkley Valley Critical Incident Response Team, to do debriefing services for the youth that were impacted by the event on New Year's. And we have also connected with service providers to be able to provide some supports for parents, whether that be debriefing supports for parents or if there's parents wanting to come forward to just learn about helping their kids navigate traumatic experiences and kind of things to look for and some of the tools that they can kind of add to their toolbox, then we'll be able to offer that as well.
Do you know anything about some of the resources that are going to be delivered, especially to people who maybe didn't witness the event, but they feel very affected by it and they're trying to be a caregiver? Do you have an idea of any of what those programs would be or resources for them?
Yeah, anyone that's looking for support and information can certainly connect with me here at Northern Society for Domestic Peace. We have had a little bit of interest in folks reaching out that maybe didn't have kids who were at the event, but are kind of looking for information. So what I'm looking to do is actually plan something for the future for those families. What we have running right now is just for people who were at the event or directly impacted. But what we are noticing is that there's kind of an interest in getting some resources and information for folks that were maybe impacted from more of a distance. So we're triaging and dealing with those directly impacted from the event initially, and then we'll kind of roll out to people that were a little bit more at a distance. We just have to manage our own capacity with service providers to see what we can do when.
Briefly, before we were recording this interview, we were speaking about how this is a little outside of the purview of what Northern Society of Domestic Peace would typically do. So how are you mitigating the short-term need for individuals who have been affected by this incident?
So with any incident, the size and scale of this, I think it's really important to note that no one organization or system is necessarily equipped to deal with it independently. So we always look to work collaboratively with other organizations or service providers and be a bit of a conduit for that information. So in this particular case, we've put a call out in collaboration with the school psychologist to collect names of clinicians and qualified folks that might be able to be offering some some one-on-one services on a short-term basis to those that wouldn't otherwise be able to access. So like, you know, trauma counseling and things like that. So I will have a list of those service providers who are able to do that. And I would encourage anybody that has youth that have been impacted that need supports beyond the debrief that we're able to offer, connect with myself so that I can get a referral done and we can get some immediate supports in place for those impacted.
Yeah. Now, from your professional perspective, how has this event affected the community as a whole?
Oh boy, it's been quite significant. We have numerous youth who have been impacted, and I think just being in the environment at home with those youth, parents and caregivers have been impacted as well, and it can be very challenging. We feel the ripples for sure, even beyond the families that I think, you know, being in a small town, we kind of hear stories and things get out there and our minds kind of get going and thinking about what that must have been like. And, you know, we certainly see a lot of compassion, but there's also a lot of option for, you know, kind of a stress response around that for sure. So it's been lovely to see the community coming together and pulling together to do the best that we can to support folks for sure.
Seeing as, again, this is airing the day after the critical incident debrief, what's the best way for people who maybe are hearing this and, you know, sometimes there's almost guilt about feeling the way that you feel if you've been affected by something but you weren't there to witness. If those people want to connect with you or get referred to, what's the best way to for people to seek help?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really great point that sometimes, you know, we have a bit of survivor's guilt or not sure why we're feeling the way that we do. And all of that's really quite normal in the wake of a crisis or trauma experience. So I would encourage anybody to give a call to our main office, which we can be reached at 250-847-9000. Alternatively, an email to myself, amy@nsdp.ca will do the trick, and we'll do what we can to connect people with the supports that they need.
Amy, thank you so much for taking the time. I'm sure you are exhausted, and I really appreciate you taking the time to share this with myself and CICK News listeners.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for reaching out. It's good to any avenue that we can to kind of get the information out there is wonderful. So thanks for reaching out.
Mark De Hoog is a member of the same critical response team and made a public post about the need for a fast, collaborative approach to reducing long-term effects of trauma on the community of Smithers. Mark spoke with me on Wednesday, January 10th, and here's that interview now.
My name is Mark De Hoog. I am a call coordinator for the Oakley Valley Critical Incident Response Team. I've been operating in the community for about 25 years.
So here's what we know about the event on New Year's Eve. Someone threw something onto the fire, which resulted in six teens being badly burned. And two of the teens, Jordan Parker and Micah Urban, suffered the most serious injuries. I have spoken with Evie, who is responding to any media requests on behalf of the family of both Jordan and Micah. And we did get some positive news today. But before speaking with Evie, the community was really in shock and kind of having to pick up the pieces on their own. So where do you fit in this scenario for the community?
Yeah, so generally speaking, when an incident occurs in our community, there are a few agencies that obviously we hope that no one ever has to use. One of them would be police-based victim services, and another one would be the Oakley Valley Critical Incident Response Team. And what happens is when an incident like this unfolds, we get a phone call and we put a team together to respond relatively quickly to the people who were on scene, whether that be first responders or witnesses, to help them cope with the stress and the trauma that is immediately there.
And what is your experience with offering this type of critical response, but also psychological first aid in situations like this?
Well, generally, what happens is when an incident like this happens, people have a variety of physiological, emotional, spiritual responses to this. And what we find is that the sooner people can have a guided process to lead them through to talk about it, put the pieces of the puzzle together of the event, and then process what's going on in them internally, both the thoughts and the reactions and the symptoms that they're having, We find the sooner that we can do that, the better they are long-term to move through that process.
What are some of the more maybe hidden or vicarious traumas that can happen when especially young people and their parents witness or hear about an event like this?
Well, the hidden traumas, oftentimes in a situation like this, you have multiple traumas happening with many, many witnesses. This particular event, you know, did have a lot of people involved at the scene. And the hidden traumas for people that were there would be feelings of guilt that, you know, our friends were hurt really bad, but we walked away. Other things would be flashbacks of the scene, replaying in their mind, unable to sleep, loss of appetite. You know, these things happen kind of behind the scenes that people aren't really not quite sure what to make of. And it can be a bit scary. Other dynamics are, you know, a spiritual crisis, like why would God let this happen? Or why do these things kind of happen? Anger maybe at the event or someone at the event or anything like that. Those things are part of our bodies and our minds trying to make sense of a very abnormal event that happens in our lives. Some of the vicarious trauma that you are asking about, vicarious trauma is really somebody who wasn't there, but now they're being told about it, or they're seeing pictures of it, or, you know, they're witnessing it from a secondhand perspective. And that can be just as difficult because you're not able to put the pieces of the puzzle together. You're only seeing the worst of it. And you're not seeing the heroes that were there at the scene doing great things. You're just seeing all the horrible things that have happened. So vicarious trauma can have significant physiological and emotional impacts by people hearing about it. So parents obviously would be significantly impacted by this if they had a child that was there or a teenager that was there, because they would go through, what if that was my child? What, you know, I feel guilty about even letting my kid go, or all of those dynamics go on within the mind and heart of a parent. And then friends of friends, you know, so you can see very quickly how this could cascade out into our community and be quite a significant event for many different people who are feeling the trauma and the horrific elements of this incident. Generally speaking, what happens in a community is the rumor mill goes around, and that can be quite traumatic for both the people on the scene and people hearing about it, because you don't actually know what actually happened and you don't know what's true. And so that can really cause difficulty for people to cope. The ideal scenario is to obviously have people listen intently to people that are struggling, but not to pass on information unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to quote a post that you made on Facebook a few days after the event where you said, "I, for one, as a helper who often responds to events like this with psychological first aid, have been embarrassed with our struggle to collaboratively provide a coordinated community response for students, families, and community members." Can you tell me what you meant by that comment?
Yeah, I mean, when you have an event of this magnitude happen, the best approach is for community agencies to collaborate together to develop a strategic response. And it seemed that we struggled to provide some of those things collaboratively. I know there were great responses happening, but they were kind of within certain organizations or certain approaches and certain silos within our community, maybe institutions, and everybody was doing a fantastic job within the scope of their institution. But the magnitude of this event steps beyond scope of many of what our institutions can provide. And in a scenario like this, what I was embarrassed about is that we were not able to quickly collaborate together to create a response. Of course, my post, you know, came out of a sense of discussion with many people. And the response to that, obviously, was there were other people beginning a collaborative process. I jumped in that process, and we've had, you know, now an opportunity to provide some services to maybe people that have not had opportunity to process what happened for them. Additionally, in that, we've had some professional counselors, mental health workers, a variety of people come along and say, you know what, we're willing to provide pro bono services for people who were at this event in order to help them process through this. And that's the kind of collaboration that becomes a beautiful thing in a community like ours.
Absolutely. And I did get the opportunity to speak with Amy Stokes about some of those services being provided as well, and that there's been a teen counselor that's been working with the students at the high school as well, which is so, so vital.
Yes, fantastic. Yeah.
Mark, was there anything else that I didn't ask about that you think is important for people to know? I did speak to Amy. I'll just interject here. I did speak to Amy about the critical incident debrief, but maybe even for longer term or people who they will need guidance beyond kind of the immediate first shockwave of this. Is there anything that you want to share in that regard?
Yeah, I would say we really want to. You know, I think the superpower that we have in a situation like this as individuals is to be self-aware and to listen intently to what's going on in our bodies, in and around us. You know, first and foremost, I think, you know, we're still just a week and a bit past this event. So, you know, people that are experiencing symptoms like unable to sleep or flashbacks or great overwhelming anxiety, you know, or just crying all the time when they think about this incident, maybe be gracious to yourself, be aware, but be gracious that you're still in a window of where all of this stress is still very real in your body, and to take care of yourself, get good rest as best as you can, you know, drink lots of water, take your vitamins, eat healthy, try and avoid, you know, high levels of caffeine, live life as normally as you can, but don't cover up what's going on in your body. Additionally, I would say another component that's really important and the beautiful thing that's emerging in our community is all the help that's coming to the families, you know, for Micah and Jordan and the others, all the help that's coming. And just, I would encourage people to consider ways that they can help, they can give. We're still very short time since this incident happened, and there's a lot of difficulty that the families will face and those students will face in the coming weeks and months, to lean into that, to care about it, and also understand the boundary in your own life. You know, I can only imagine, and I know for sure that this has been the talk of the town for the last 8 days or 10 days. And what can happen is it just becomes more things to talk about. And what we do in talking about is we traumatize ourselves and other people by continually playing this over and over and over again. Recognize that sometimes it's better just to say, I think I'm done talking about this, mm-hmm. and I just want to be quiet about it. And that's really important to recognize, both for parents, for families, for kids, you know, to sometimes just say, I don't want to talk about this anymore, or I'm going to step away from that social media group or whatever it might be, because I think I've exhausted my conversation around it. Because many times what it does is it moves into the negative or the sensational elements of it, or the traumatic elements of it, and doesn't move to the positive elements of it. And that component for me is an important element in trauma, is to celebrate the heroes, to point out the good things that are happening and the things that we are learning together as a community from an event like this. And what I'm looking for as a broad community is I'm looking for those things to begin to emerge more through the story.
Excellent. Now, you did say also in your post, and again, because some people maybe don't have social media, so if they are seeking support and they should contact you, what's the best way for them to contact you?
Yeah, I mean, I volunteered myself. You know, if you need a place to talk in a confidential way, I'm here. I'm also connected to counselors and other people that could help and provide services as well. The best way for people to contact me, you know, you can find me on Facebook, Mark DeHoog. I'm probably the only Mark DeHoog on Facebook, so find me and just send me a message, or they can email me, mark@markdehoog.com.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking the time today, Mark.
Thanks, Pamela.
Lastly, an update from Evie McKay, close friend of Jordan Parker's mother, Joan, about the two boys who were taken to Vancouver Hospital due to the severity of their injuries. How do you know Jordan and Micah?
So I grew up with Jordan's mom. Our kids were in cadets together, and we serve on the Navy League Board of Canada, Smithers Branch Board together.
What I was hoping was to get a little bit of an update on the recovery of both Jordan and Micah. So are you comfortable to share that with me?
Yeah, no problem. Micah was transferred over to BC Children's, so both boys are at BC Children's Hospital now. Micah was having a hard time getting his pain management under control, and he's doing a lot better now that he's at Children's. Jordan went in for surgery. He had surgery on his neck and I believe some skin graft on his hand, that they took the skin grafts from his own skin. Micah's burns on his abdomen and stuff are a little bit more extensive, and his neck, so they're going to do a donor skin graft first, and then after a couple days, he'll go back in for surgery, and they'll actually harvest some of his own tissue and skin to do skin grafts on him as well.
Wow. How are the families holding things together?
I mean, they're doing as best that they can. I know that Micah's mom was struggling a little bit, getting some sleep and kind of holding it together. Their spouses are with them now, so I think that's taken a lot of weight off, and just having Micah moved over to Children's was a huge relief for them. The room's better. They have a place to lay down kind of thing in the same room as Micah. Yeah, Joni is just one of the most incredible, strong people you've ever met. So I know that she's doing a good job of advocating for, like, even both families and holding it together.
Yeah. Evie, what can the community do to help? It feels like a lot of people really want to be proactive and helpful, but you kind of, you know, with a situation like this, you're never really sure. So, is there kind of any advice that you would have for people who do want to help?
So we have a GoFundMe going for each of the boys and their families. So that's one way to help. I know that GoFundMe does take a small portion, so a lot of people have reached out, and I'm able to send them information on how they can send funds directly to the family so that it doesn't have to go through the GoFundMe, so they get all of that. A lot of people have reached out. It's been a huge amount of support from the community, people sending them Starbucks cards just so they can get a coffee while they're down there, that type of thing. And we've had a lot of support and people reaching out from Smithers that are, like, making their way down to Vancouver, offering to take supplies and stuff to the family's clothes, whatever they kind of need. While they're down there, it sounds like they're going to be down there for a while. Micah's mom just posted that he will be in the hospital for at least another couple weeks, but he's not allowed to leave the area until all of his wounds have kind of closed up and completely healed. So they're kind of down there for the long run.
Yeah. Evie, is there anything that I didn't ask that you think is important for people to know about this this incident or just the recovery?
Just the community support has been incredible. It didn't just affect the kids that were burnt. There are other kids here in the valley that were burnt that are dealing with those kind of things. I just talked to one of the moms today, and it doesn't look like he's going to have to need plastic surgery to repair his stuff. Things are healing well. But the counselor at the high school is incredible. We're so lucky to have her. She's been a huge, huge help and support for all of the kids involved and their families. They are doing different things. There was a psychologist working with the kids at the school, and I know that the Kim Smithers Community Services are holding a debriefing and stuff like that. So there is supports out there if people need them. They just kind of need to touch base and reach out for that.
Yeah. Thank you so much for what you're doing for these families and also for taking the time to speak with me.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. If you listened to this episode and want to reach out for help, either for yourself or a member of your family or friend, do not hesitate to contact the Critical Response Team via the Northern Society for Domestic Peace, and they will connect you with the help you need. My last news story today is with Will George, the Director of Community Services for the Town of Smithers, about the Emergency Warming Center, which was erected yesterday, January 10th, in the parking lot of the Smithers Public Library. Environment Canada issued a severe weather warning for this week, with temperatures threatening to go as low as minus 30 degrees Celsius overnight. The town, along with the Situation Table, a group of community organizations aimed to address acute and long-term needs of Smithers' most vulnerable population, received emergency funding on Wednesday, and the tent was up and heated by Wednesday evening. This temporary warming center is supposed to be used for daytime stints, as the town and their partners are seeking indoor overnight sleeping arrangements where they can for the unhoused of Smithers. Here's that interview with Will George now.
Thanks for having me on. My name is Will George, Director of Community Services with the Town of Smithers.
Okay, so the Town of Smithers has made a decision to provide emergency warming facilities at the library with the Situation Table. Who else was part of this decision?
Yeah, that's correct. So last night on January 9th, Town Council approved a temporary emergency warming shelter at the Smithers Library parking lot. So that's right across from the encampment. This will only be taking a portion of the parking lot, the side closest to the encampment. So there's still parking available on the opposite side. This tent is a 24 by 14 tent in the parking lot there. And this is a emergency warming center tent there. This is something that was brought up by our ESS team with the town of Smithers, as well as with supports from the situation table. So really we have wraparound services from the Office of the Wet'suwet'en, the RCMP, Dzelkant, Northern Health. There's a variety of organizations through the situation table that will be providing service. And this is temporary just during the cold snap that we have here until the cold weather warning is rescinded, hopefully next week.
And so there was, I believe it's $6,000 of funding provided. Who gave that funding?
Yeah, so that is through the Level 1 Emergency Operations Center, and we have approved authorization. I think we might be up to a little bit more than the $6,000, just things are moving quite quickly here. We have, you know, an electrician came in this morning to install 100-amp electrical service at the near the library there to make sure that we have the warming center that's equipped with electrical heaters. So, you know, we do have a emergency task number through emergency management and climate readiness. That's EMCR to support the town with this financial cost that we'll be incurring through this. So that will be through our task number there.
Mm-hmm. In last month's council meeting, there was a letter that was shared and read by Wendy Wright of Smithers Public Library as to their decision to allow people into the library before it opens, which is typically noon most days, in order for people to warm up. Is that still happening? And is that part of this plan to provide warm facilities?
Yeah. So what I will say on that is, you know, there are some sites where people can go for the overnight shelter, whether it's at Goodacre Place or during the day, such as at the Friendship Center, where people can warm up. This was brought up as a suggestion to Town Council to look at the library as a warming center. You know, the resources for this warming center that we're looking at in the parking lot with the heated tent are what we're providing for services for those individuals that will not be going to overnight sheltering service, whether it's a Goodacre or other locations in the community, to ensure that they still have a warm place where they can warm up there just in this overnight time period where it's dropping down quite a bit.
Now, I know that this question probably gets posed to you often, but are there any plans by the town to make something that is more long-term, like the town did in the winter of 2020, for just a safe, warmer place that has, you know, a certain level of security to it, but more or less just keeping people off the ground? Is there any plans by the town to extend this for the entire winter?
Yeah, so what I wanted to say on that is the town is looking with our partners for longer term emergency sheltering for our vulnerably housed individuals, you know, both for partnerships with BC Housing, as well as for more overnight spaces that are available. I believe the shelter that you're referring to a few years ago, there was some safety concerns around that. So that was something that, of course, we explored. And we did put a call out since last winter for indoor shelter space overnight that we could rent out, that we could have available. There wasn't any available options in the community, which was unfortunate, but we do want to make sure that there is a warming space that is available. And this warming tent that's open 24/7 and monitored is what we have available for this cold spell that we have for the next week or so here. Now, I will say that this is just temporary. So it's being set up today. It's coming down once it warms up a little bit. And we continue to work with our partners to explore more longer term options. We've worked with the Office of the Wet'suwet'en, the Friendship Center, Northern Health, to ensure that donations that are received and materials for warm clothing and bedding that allows individuals to be more off the ground are put in place, and those have been provided to individuals at the encampment there. Once we have the tent that's up, the heated tent there. We'll be sharing this on the Town of Smithers Facebook page and ensuring that we send that to you so you can ensure that your listeners are up to date. And, you know, this is a solution for temporary emergency warming center just for this cold spell. And we continue to explore options moving forward for more permanent solutions. We're hoping that this will work for our individuals with the wraparound services and the support from individuals such as at the situation table.
Yep. Okay. Thanks so much, Will, for taking the time to speak with me.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.